Man, all right. Gosh, is that amazing or what? Every time I try to transition. Gosh, that is so fun to see the band up here and just their leading, doing such an incredible job. So we are going to continue this series that we've been doing over the weekend, The Good Life, and I'm going to start with a story that will give us some traction. This took place 8 years ago. So I moved to Dallas 8 years ago, was going to take a job at Watermark, moved to Dallas, moved into a back house with a Watermark family. There's this couple, had a back house, it was like moving in with for real, Uncle Phil. And they were super sweet, super accommodating, said you can live in our back house, this is amazing. And I came up here to work for Watermark. I had a month gap between when I was going to start work. And so I had this month of free time where I was like, man, maybe I should get a job. So I move in, meet the new people that I'm going to live with and decide I'm going to go get a job. Had a connection with a restaurant in town and said, man, maybe I'll go wait tables. So call, get set up, get all hooked up to work a job, show up, first day on the job, get trained. I'm all set and all ready to go wait tables. I've never waited tables before, but, I'm thinking, how hard can this be? And I get to my first table. It's like a group of six people. And it was like, for whatever reason, it was like, I don't know if they were in like the cartel or a gang or something, but this is the table that I walk up to and I'm like, oh my gosh, if I mess up their order, I'm not leaving this place alive. And so I begin to take their orders and I take all the drink orders and I go back and I'm all set. Hey, it's going to be great. Get the drink orders, go back to the kitchen, get my serving tray, the circular serving tray. And immediately I realize that holding the serving tray with one hand is much more challenging than anyone realizes. If you've ever been a waiter, like props to you, because I begin to put on the drinks on there and there's just no way that I'm going to be able to like support this in any way. So I'm putting all the drinks on there and I decide we're going to have to go plan B. I pull out the tray and just start carrying it out like I'm leaving the lunchroom with these drinks. And I take it over to the table, and I begin to, like, I'm holding the tray. I can't believe this happened. And I begin to take the drinks, and I'm like, oh, here you go. Okay, yes, you, sir. Here we go. Okay, you, sir. And at some point, gravity took over, and when you take one drink off of one side, you need to really counterbalance, which wasn't easy to do when I'm bear-hugging it, and all the drinks go immediately onto the table, onto everyone there. Like, I'm not talking like, oh, they kind of hit the table and they went there. They went all over everybody. One dude I decked with a raspberry tea so bad, I couldn't have got more on him had I not gone right here on his lap. Like, there was not enough towels, true story, in the building to clean this up. And immediately, like, everything explodes. Everybody's, unbelievable. What is this? Unbelievable. And my manager comes up. There's chaos going all around me. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, I'm now going to get fired and killed by these people. And the manager comes up, grabs me on the shoulder. Hey, just go to the back. We'll figure it out. Go to the back. And I go to the back. I'm in the kitchen. I'm like, man, I'm really not cut out for this. And that platter thing, wow, got the best of me. And someone comes up. And I'm sitting there in the kitchen just kind of trying to collect my thoughts, put a will together, and and someone comes up and says, hey, your parents are here. And I'm like, my parents? That escalated quickly. My parents? What? There's so many things confusing about that. My parents live in Houston, and they're divorced. How are they? Is this the reunion night? What's taking place here? My parents, and they're like, yeah, they said you're your parents. I'm like, they can't be my parents. They said you're your parents, and they point to who they were, and it's the couple of the family that I just moved in with. I'm like, maybe they misunderstood. So I go over to the table. I go over and meet, like, I just met these people, and they're like, hey, we're here to see you. How's the first day on the job? And I'm like, I literally have one arm around them and one over here. My heart's, like, racing because I'm like, it's over for me. This is how it ends. And I go, it's not going great. And I just decked a guy with a raspberry iced tea. And I think I'm about to get fired. And somebody comes up and taps me on the shoulder, walk by, hey, the manager wants to see you. And I'm like, okay, thank you for letting me live a couple days here. And true story, I literally go, I hug the dad. And I lean over to the mom. And I kiss her on the cheek. And I walk off. And I'm like, I just kissed her on the cheek. To this day. To this day, we have never talked about it, ever. And it was like, true story. I mean, literally, I was like, I just kissed that woman on the cheek, and I just met her name a second ago. Oh my gosh, what did I just do? And in the midst of the chaos, I don't even honestly, I can't explain what happened, what took over me. It was just like, man, did that just actually happen? It did actually happen, man. And here's where I start there. Because I just had to get that off my chest. No, because in the midst of chaos, it, just like in that situation, like just people do crazy things. Like when life feels out of control and things are going every direction, people do things that almost seem irrational. People will turn to different things to find relief in certain cases. When life feels out of your control, chaotic, not just in a waiting sense, but when life, you know, inside of your job, work environment, when your relationships feel out of control, when whatever it is, maybe somebody's getting sick in your family, maybe, you know, you're getting transferred. When life just feels out of control, people will do anything to cope with the fact that things just feel chaotic. People do things that are they never would have done in their right mind. I mean, think about like all the decisions that have been made where people are just essentially reacting, like something broke or something falls apart inside of their life and people will just react. I mean, people will have one night stands just because, man, the relationship had broke. I thought we were getting engaged. I thought this was going to go to the altar. It didn't. People will turn to all kinds of different things to provide relief. Alcohol, Xanax. I mean, how many people just, they get up, they go smoke weed just to get some peace. I mean, we'll turn back to nicotine. It's been a hard day, dude. I just lost my job. I'm going to start dipping again. I just did it. I'm not, I think I've earned it at this point. In the midst of chaos, people will do things that almost seem irrational. And tonight, as we continue this series, The Good Life, what we're going to talk about is just the idea of what do you do when life seems out of control? Like, where do you turn to? Who do you turn to? What do you do when life seems out of control? Because here's the truth. It is possible to experience the good life inside of this world. Jesus came to establish and give the abundant life. But we live in a world that Jesus, the same one who said, hey, I came that you would have the abundant life, also said, you are living in a world that is broken. And in this world, I'm promising you right now, followers, he said in John 16, you are going to have trouble. It's going to be hard. But let your strength be found in the fact that I've overcome the world. And so it is possible to live the good life in this world that is broken and awaiting its Savior to come back and fully heal it. And it's so important for us to know because here's the truth. It's easy to live the good life when things are going good, isn't it? Like, it's easy to live the good life when you're like, yeah, you know, we met, we got engaged, we've been perfect, we're high school sweethearts, got the perfect job, moved the house, got the nice car, got everything great. We got three kids, and I've never had any problems in life. Like, that person, it's easy to live the good life, or it's easier. But it's in those moments where chaos and everything feels out of control, where oftentimes we just go into reacting mode and we make decisions, we regret, we make decisions that in our right minds we never would have made. So tonight we're going to look at a story that parallels so much of our experience in those moments where things feel out of control. And what do we do? And we're going to learn from the example of the disciples and this interaction that they have with Jesus, what we do in the midst of how we can experience the good life and how we can find peace in a world that at times feels or seems out of control. We're going to be in Mark chapter 4. If you have a Bible, you can flip open to Mark chapter 4. We're going to look at a story that was clearly important at some level to God because he included it three times in the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And we're going to look at an interaction Jesus has on the water. We're going to be here like 25 minutes. So I know there's people, everyone's like camp drunk right now and it's exhausted. Stay in with me. And in 25 minutes, we'll be out of here. But we're going to see from this moment and this storm that the disciples go into really a parallel for our experience in the midst of chaos and when life feels out of control. And so if you have a Bible, you can flip there. If not, it'll be on the screens. On that note, if you don't have a Bible, we have some in the hospitality room we'd love to give you if you don't have one. So you can pick one up after this message. And we'll start in verse 35. Jesus, in Mark chapter 4, here's the context kind of the book. Jesus had just kicked off his ministry, left his carpentry business, went into full-time ministry, recruits 12 guys, and starts a mission to change the world. And he goes out, and right before this passage that we're going to read, he's been teaching. Sermon on the Mount had just taken place, we're told by Matthew when he records it. And he's been healing all these guys, gets tired from a long day, and gets his boys in a boat and says, hey, let's head to the other side. Here's what happens. Verse 35. And as evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. It was the Sea of Galilee, you may have in your version, but other side of the lake. So they took Jesus in a boat, and they started out, leaving the crowds that he had been teaching behind, although other boats followed. But soon, a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat and began to fill it with water. Here's what's interesting about this word, fierce storm. This is a word that, so the New Testament originally was written in Greek, got translated to English, which is how we can read it. But in the original Greek, this word for fierce storm is only translated storm here in the entire New Testament. It's a word that every other place we have it is earthquake. And when they looked at it, like, water earthquake, that doesn't seem like it would make sense. But it's the essentially Mark going, dude, it was bad. I mean, things went, it was like the water, all of a sudden, everything's shaking around us. So they're saying, literally, it's like almost an earthquake on the water. The boat's going crazy. It's filling with water. And here's what happens. And Jesus was sleeping on the back of the boat with his head on a cushion, which I don't know why I love that. It's just like Mark was like, and there was a pillow there, and it was a feather top, and he really, as though he needed, somehow Jesus found some sort of cushion in there. The disciples went, so the boat is going crazy. They're paddling for their lives. They're like, dude, we're not going to make it out of here. They go and they wake him up shouting, teacher, to Jesus. The disciples go to him. Don't you care that we're going to drown? You guys see the scene? So they get in this boat. Jesus gets done teaching. He's like, guys, hey, everybody in the boat, we're going to head across to the other side. You know, we could take the camel around on land, but everybody get in the boat. We're going to head over there, but I'm going to take some Z's. So Jesus is in the back of the boat, essentially snoring, while they're up top screaming, panicking. And it's not a big boat either, less than the size of the stage, probably 24, 25 feet. And the disciples are freaking out. Like, the contrast is so stark between the response of the disciples who are hitting this fear storm or earthquake on the water. And they're going, man, we're going to die. And we know these weren't guys who were like new to the water. I mean, Peter and Andrew, they grew up on the water, right? Like, they're fishermen. Like, we've seen it all on this lake. We've been here, done that. I've been in bad storms, good storms, all the storms. So whatever it was, it must have been incredibly bad for him to go, Jesus, this is how it all ends. We're about to die right now. And you're over there on your little cushion and you don't even care about it. And they go over and they wake him up. And the first thing that I really want to point out from this text is so common to the human experience. And really, if you want to live the good life, you and I are going to have to learn to not do what the disciples did, but do the opposite, which is this. In order to live the good life, you and I have to be confident in God's care. In the midst of hitting the storms of life, in the midst of things feeling like they're out of control, that you and I have to learn to be confident in God's care. And we learn it honestly by looking at what they don't do. Like, they hit the waves and they see Jesus in the back of the boat. And immediately they do what so many, I mean, all of us have heard this before. All of us, myself included, have done this before. Where when things like begin shaking or falling apart in life, the first thing we do is like, God, do you even care about what's going on? I'm single right now. All of my friends, they've all gotten married. They've moved on. Do you even care? Like, it's awkward for me to even hang out with them because they're all there with their husbands and it's not even fun. Do you even care what's going on? I mean, their human experiences for all of us in those moments to turn. And understandably, I mean, sometimes it's like, man, God, do you even care? I'm 28 and I've got health issues. Do you know how weird and unusual that is? Do you care? What are you doing? I mean, my job, I just got laid off for things I wasn't even responsible for. Do you even care? I mean, Harvey. God, hundreds of thousands of people are separated from their homes or lost their homes, and they're not going to get them back. Do you even care? And so often this experience is really common to all of us, and I think what the Bible would teach us is that there is a God who is there, there is a God who cares, who invites us to be confident in his care, not because we're not going to face storms of life, but because he promises elsewhere in the scripture that though you live in a broken world, that's going to have storms. I, the Lord your God, promise a purpose in the problems you face, a purpose in the storms that you will face. The New Testament teaches, in other words. So the disciples do what many people do, which is in the midst of crisis, they just turn their back on God. And the New Testament teaches that in the midst of crisis, you and I don't have to. Because it tells us that in the midst of the chaos of life around us, we can trust, if you're a Christian or a follower of Jesus, that everything that you're facing has sovereignly passed through his hands, or God's in control of, and he's going to use even the bad things for good in your life. He says this, Paul says it in one of, there's so many different places where it points this out, but Paul says this in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, he says, and we know that in all things, not in some things, not in a few things, not in Christian things, in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose, that God's working everything for the good of those who love him, or for Christ followers. For those who God foreknew, he also predestined. What is the good that he's working in them? That they would be conformed to the image of his son, so that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. Paul doesn't say that he will use, or that everything in life will be good if you love God. You notice that? He says the opposite. He says, God, if you love God, or if you're a Christ follower, everything bad will be used for your good. He doesn't say that if you follow Jesus, and how amazing would that be? Like if we stand up here and be like, dude, he's never gonna let you down. You tell him exactly what you want. He's a genie in a bottle. All you gotta do is tell him exactly the height, weight, and whatever husband you kinda want, and he's gonna give it to you. That's just not gonna happen. All you gotta do is just, you know, say your prayers every night. You're never gonna get cancer. You're never gonna lose your job. You're gonna get promoted. It's just not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that it's not that, hey, if you follow Jesus, everything will be good. It teaches that if you follow Jesus, everything bad will be used for your good. That every wave that crashes into you will be used to shape you into the image of Jesus. And in the midst of all of that brokenness, God, who knows the human experience and what it feels like to be betrayed and experience the pains of life, looks at you and says, and I'm inviting you to be confident in my care, that there is a way when life feels out of control to trust in me and find your peace in me. It's not dissimilar. Like, I don't know if anyone college football fans here? Yeah. It's like yesterday was Christmas because it was launch and college football started. And here's why I love college football versus NFL. There's a number of different reasons, but you know, they're not getting paid these enormous salaries, kind of like purity of the game kind of thing. And then there's another reason, which is the halftime. Because there's something about, I went to Texas A&M where apparently everyone else here did too. And so the band was a big deal. So at halftime, you stay at the band. Okay, all right. And it's the same thing at a lot of other colleges. Like you go, you don't just, hey, it's halftime show. Here's the go-go dancers. Let's go get some popcorn. No offense to the go-go community. And if anyone's here, for real. Anyways, here's what you don't do during halftime. You hang around. You like to see it. There's actually something to see because the band comes out and they're on the field. If you've ever gone to a college football game and you've sat on the first layer, you've seen the band, and the experience that you have watching the band is vastly different from if you watch it from above. If you watch it just at eye level, like I went to a game last year, and if you see the band on the first level, if you see it at eye level, you're like, it just looks like chaos. Like there's people, there's the tuba, he's going over here, he's turning. You're like, oh my gosh, these people are about to hit. Is there a medic around? They're about to like collide. It just looks like disorder and chaos. And you just see these different instruments moving and going every direction. And then you look up at the screens and you see that there's purpose. Like they're spelling out their team name or the United States flag or whatever it is, that in the midst of what on the ground level just looks chaotic, looks like hurricanes, looks like abuse, looks like things that are impossible to be full of any purpose or used for any purpose. Until you see it from above, all of a sudden you see there was order in it. And the scriptures teach that there will come a day that everything broken in our world, for those who love Jesus, you'll see it from above and you'll see the purpose in that. And I, like you, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around some things that fall into that disorder category. And Jesus says, will you trust me? There is a way. I'm inviting you to be confident that in the storm, you don't have to wonder if I care. He goes in next and shows us the second part of what the good life is like. Here's what happens next in the story. When Jesus, so he's asleep, they wake him up. When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm, like it goes from blowing every which direction. The disciples are fearing for their lives. All of a sudden, Jesus says, silence! And it's like the water turns to glass. And then he asked them, gosh, this like so ministered to me. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? So Jesus, you know, he wakes up from his nap, gets up, stretches a little bit, yawns, there's a hurricane going on, protect the cushion, sits up, and they're like, don't you care that we're dying out here? And he goes, dying? Stop! And he rebukes the wind and waves, and they listen, like a guy would do with his golden retriever. Like, I mean, this is what Jesus just did. And not only that, the word for be quiet or be still is like an ongoing verb. It's like, hey, I want you to continue being quiet. He puts the waves and wind in timeout, essentially, is what he does. And the disciples are sitting there, and then he looks at them, and he asks them such a crazy question. Think about this. I mean, literally the boat's filling up with water. There's waves hitting it. He's asleep. He doesn't even know what's going on. We're all gonna die out here. If anybody survives, give this to my mom. I mean, this is what's going on. And then all of a sudden, Jesus wakes up. It stops and he says, why are you afraid? I mean, what a bizarre question. I mean, this is like Jesus looking at you if you just express it, man, my mom has got stage 4 cancer. And I'm scared of what's going to happen. And I'm going, why are you afraid? You still have no faith? I mean, it almost feels like insensitive. But I think what Jesus is pointing to is something he points to all over the New Testament, over and over and over again. Our second idea from the text, and we'll continue about what he points to, is that the good life is one that is full of faith, not fear. That the more you and I begin to experience a life that is full of faith and less of fear, the more that our faith grows and our fears shrink, we begin to experience more and more of the good life. Here's what Jesus points to all over the New Testament. Here's why this, out of context, it almost feels like, man, Jesus, why would you even ask that? That's like insensitive and just bizarre. When you look at it in the entirety of the New Testament over and over and over again, it begins to make sense. Because there's a destination that Jesus wants to take every person who follows him to. In other words, if you begin to follow Jesus, if you are following Jesus, there's a destination that he wants to bring each one of us to, and you to, that is not just, hey, you're going to go to heaven someday. It's not, hey, if you follow Jesus, you know, you're going to have this perfect, amazing life that's pain-free and problem-free. That's not where he wants to take. It's not just that, hey, if you follow Jesus, you're going to be better at life, which is true. You're going to be a better husband, better wife. You're going to be a better friend, all those things. But that's not the destination. There's a destination in this life he wants to bring everyone to, and it's this. He wants to bring everyone to this place where their faith grows so large that they begin to fear less and fear less and fear less until they're fearless. Like as though he takes everyone, if you're going to follow me, it is next stop, no fear. That's the journey I'm going to bring everybody on. It's going to be a process. It's not going to happen maybe overnight, but I want to invite you to put your faith and trust in me in such a way that your faith, the invitation to everybody who follows Jesus, is that you would begin to fear less as you trust me more, and fear less, because I'm going to see you become fearless. And that's the journey that everybody, I mean, look all over the New Testament. You read it. If you read the New Testament and the Old, the most common command that is there is I want you to fear not. Do not be afraid. In both Testaments. Think about that. As though God's like, look, if we got to hammer one thing home, hammer this home. I do not want them to live in fear because they know the one who perfect love has cast out all fear. And I'm inviting them in the midst of the world. And I know control and anxiety is all over this world or all over this room. And Jesus says, look, I give you, I can promise you this. If you follow me, you are going to begin to fear less and fear less and fear less and move closer towards fearless, not overnight. If you're like, man, look, I've been a Christian for 8 years. I still have anxiety. It's not overnight. But that's the destination. That's the journey that he's bringing and wants to bring every person that's in this room towards. I mean, you see it in Matthew chapter 10 where Jesus says, hey, I want you to not be afraid. After telling them, you guys are going to be handed over and killed and crucified for me. And he says, but I want you to not be afraid. It's like, what? Why don't you just stop the people they're going to kill and crucify us? He says, I want you to not fear those who can hurt your body, but fear him who could hurt your body and soul. In Matthew chapter 6, you've probably been familiar with this one, where Jesus says, don't be afraid or worry about what to eat or drink or what to wear, for pagans, people who don't know God, are afraid of that. But your heavenly Father knows that you need him. You have a heavenly Father. Seek his kingdom. Over and over and over again, the invitation is, I don't want you to be afraid, and I'm inviting you to follow. And if you do, you will fear less and move closer to a life that experiences something fearless. When I read this, this feels so far to me. And it feels like something I'm like, God, I want to continue to move in that direction because I know I'm not there. Like I heard Todd this morning, are you here, Todd, when Todd's like, look, guys, so I got cancer. It's on my foot, and if God wants to take the foot, it's God's foot. And if I got to be a peg leg pirate, that's fine. And I'm like, what? God, please don't take the foot. If my eye hurts, I'm like, oh man, I got eye cancer. This is how it's going to end. God, that just feels crazy to me that someone would jump to like, man, God, I'm great being a pirate, and I want to be there. And I find comfort in the fact that the invitation that Jesus gives over and over and over again is one that Todd has accepted and walked in for 35 years, that if you follow, not in a moment, but day by day, moment by moment, trust in me, your faith will grow and your fear will shrink. And you will become more and more fearless and you will fear less. So the question is, how do we do that? And we see it in the next parallel that's inside of the story. Here's what happens next. So Jesus calms the wave, asks him, why are you afraid? And then this happens with the disciples. The disciples were absolutely terrified. In other words, it's a more extreme word than even before. They were afraid of the wind. Now it says they feared a great fear, that they're even more. We were afraid of the wind. Now we're afraid of this guy who controls the wind. And it says they were terrified and said, who is this man? They asked each other that even the wind and the waves obey him. And they realized that the wind and the waves are nothing in comparison to the one who is in the boat with them. Our third idea from this text is that the good life focuses on Christ. The good life focuses on Christ. The good life focuses on Christ. The way that your faith, like we were talking with Todd, the way that Todd's faith has grown and his trust has grown has not been by him focusing on trust. Man, you know what? Today, I got cancer. I'm just going to trust. It comes from focusing on Jesus. In other words, like any relationship that you have, the way that you grow trust in a relationship is not by just focusing on like, oh, man, I'm trusting him, is by growing to know the trustworthiness of the person you're trusting in. Like, think about that. Like, in other words, if you ever have dated somebody who has like trust issues or you have trust issues, the way that you get past trust issues, if they're like, hey, I just need to see your phone, like right now and in 5 minutes again, and 5 minutes, and hey, are you sure you were at community group? Because I really think that you were out with some other girl. And the way that you work through trust issues is not by just saying blank, you know, it's over. I'm trust. That'll eat away at you. The way that you grow in trustworthiness is by trusting and knowing the trustworthiness of someone, by beginning to know someone and know that they are worthy of trust. The way that you and I grow in our relationship with Jesus is not by focusing on trust, but by focusing on Jesus. And the more that you and I know and walk in relationship with him, see, he is worthy of being trusted as it relates to all the different areas of my life, the more your faith and my faith grows. I mean, think about it. Like, think about the disciples. Like, these dudes all of a sudden go from a moment where they're terrified to, my guess is, the next time they get in the boat and a storm comes up, they're like, dude, we're stormproof. Are you serious? We got this guy here. Like, they can be wind, the waves, do the barrel rolls, do whatever. We got Jesus in the boat. We're stormproof because I saw how he responded in the midst of the storm. Not that he's going to and guarantees that every different time in your life he's going to, or in my life. But in the midst of the disciples, you got to think, hey, I saw the power of this man. I can trust him. I've seen what he can do. And the way that you and I grow in our trust and our relationship with him, or the way that Todd's faith, to go back to that example, has grown, has not been by just saying, you know, trust. By fixing your eyes on Jesus, focusing on him, knowing Jesus through his word, knowing his character, and walking with him, and seeing the ways that what he's told us to do, told me to do, proved to be true. And he says, your faith will begin to grow. And all of a sudden, your fears will begin to shrink. And in the midst of the storm, I'm not promising that you're going to experience a storm of life, if you will, where I'm going to calm it. Because I never promised that, David, Jesus would say. I don't promise that you're going to experience just immediate peace. But I promise you this, just like in the story, I will get you to the other side of the lake. Sometimes I'm going to calm the storm around you, and sometimes I'm just going to let it go, and I'm going to be with you in the boat. I'll close here. It was 22 months ago. My wife and I were having our son delivered, and who was running around here and been here today. And I remember the day. And it's like so surreal. You go into the doctor's office, and you're about to have a baby come into the world, and you're like, oh my, all these different emotions going through you. My wife is getting ready, and we go in to get ready to deliver, and all of a sudden, it's like, we're there. We're at the starting line, and hopefully the finish line is coming soon, and I'm sitting there, and she's laying back, and I'm holding her hand, and in the midst of all of that, there'd be these moments where she'd be holding my hand, and because of like the pain, or because of the fear taking place in her body of what's going on, and I can't really tell, and are we there yet, and what's going to happen, in the midst of it, she would let go of my hand. But you know what never happened? I wasn't like, well, you let go of mine, so I guess I'm out of here. I'm done. Hey, Doc, you want to give me some ball help? I'm going to hit the concession stand down there. There wasn't ever a moment where I was like, hey, I'm out of here. But even when the pain or the fear or her uncertainty would say, man, I let go, she wouldn't even realize it at times. I never let go of her hand.
This is what the Bible teaches Jesus does. That if you've trusted in him, it's not a promise that you're not gonna get cancer. It's not a promise that you're gonna get married. It's not a promise that you're not gonna battle singleness or the inability to have children. None of those things are promised for you or for me. But it is a promise that no matter what you face in life, I will not let go of you. The Bible does not teach that whosoever holds on tight enough, it teaches that Jesus is holding on to you. And when the pain and the uncertainty, the fear of life lets go, it says we have this anchor of the soul that holds on to his people and is holding on to you. And he does not promise that you will not face storms. He doesn't promise in the midst of life is gonna be out of control. Who are you gonna turn to? I mean, I know inside of this room, so much of the dysfunctional behavior that exists here is because in the midst of things feeling out of control, you're turning to codependent relationships you never should have even been in. You're turning to Xanax, you're turning to whatever will give some relief. And Jesus says, I'm inviting you to turn to me, who's with you in the storm. I'm not promising it's gonna be easy. I'm not promising you, David, that it's always gonna go the way you want it to. I promise that I will be with you. And that at times you're gonna think, man, are you letting me down right now? And someday you're gonna see it from heaven's perspective. And you're gonna see that there was a purpose in every piece of pain that you felt. And in the midst of life feeling uncertain and out of control, you can trust me. Will you trust me? And I'll never let you go. Let me pray. Father, thank you just for the example and the teaching and the story. I want to pray right now for friends in this room who are in a storm. And it's a storm where they're losing a parent. They've lost an engagement or a relationship that they thought was for sure what you had. Their parents are divorcing. They lost their job. They're going through a storm and they feel it. And I pray that just like you hoped for the disciples, that they would see you as more real than the wind and the waves. That you would be more real than the pain, more real than the fear that is represented in so many places right now, just in front of me. Would you do the same in my heart, God? That as we go through a life that is broken or in a world that's broken, would you be more real to us? Strengthen our trust in you, our faith in you. And would we know that though you don't always say silence to the storm and stop it, you promise I will get you to the other side. Will you trust in me? And you don't let your children go. Father, we love you. We worship you. Would you strengthen our faith? Strengthen my faith. Would we see you tonight? Would we see you this weekend? And would you be more real to us than the distractions, even in this moment, fighting for our attention? Amen.